G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 4B.
So, again, why should we undertake this very difficult task? Why can't we really get on without solving this question? That means, what is the purpose why we should have categories? Well, I said already one point, and there is then a second point. One point is that we can simplify. Categories are here not to make things difficult for us, but to make things simple for us. Namely, to reduce the infinite variety to simplicity, so that, and how can we do that? By finding common denominators which would embrace a great number of similar, characteristically similar elements. For instance, you have trees. Well, tree is a category. Under trees you can understand the fir tree, the oak, the pine tree, the larch, the whatever you have, the apple tree and the peach tree and I don't know what. See, instead of having a few thousand different trees, you can simplify it by saying tree. That's the category that we find. Or we have all kinds of animals. We have cats and dogs and cows and goats and lions and bears and so on. They all those hundreds and hundreds of animals, they can be brought back to one category called animal. So little by little, you can see how the many, many phenomena in the world, in the material world I'm speaking now, could be grasp much better by finding first big categories of the material world. And that makes things simpler. So if I go on a walk here up in America, where you have all those wonderful trees which we don't know in Europe, I go on those walks and look at all these various trees. I don't know their name, but I know they are trees. I don't say they are animals or they are things or they are colors. I say they are trees. I can classify them at least into one simple classification, so that they are, this is the second point, that they are distinguishable from other categories. This is the second big point, that therefore the animals are distinguishable from the trees, for instance, or from the birds, etc., so that we get distinction. And the moment I have distinction, I can understand much better. Without distinction, we cannot understand anything. So if we would live like the caveman in a universe of numberless phenomena, of objects in the world, and we could not distinguish them, we cannot understand them. It's only when we can see the difference between one and the other that we can understand them. Now, if there are no categories, we would have to distinguish the millions of different things from each other, and that's too much for our brain and for our understanding. We have to find a method, and that's a scientific method, to simplify it by building categories. These categories have, as I say, the advantage, first, they can be distinguished from each other. Distinction is a means for ordering things. I begin to order my universe. I have a universe of plants and the universe of animals and so on, and I begin to order them. By ordering it, they become simpler and they become understandable. So finally, through classification and subclassification, I get such a distinction and sub-distinctions that things become clear to us. I can see through them, through a grid of categories, and can classify my world much better. And so I find my way through that those numberless objects or phenomena in an easy way. I always think that we take these big ideas like classification as something that is natural, that is not even to be really thought of, that we can take for granted and so on. And I think that's a pity. Because only if one can stand in awe before a great scientific insight, a great scientific criteria, only then one begins to appreciate what we have in a way of science and how we can use it further. We take it for granted, say, that we can calculate in the realm of arithmetic. Each one that sits in here can really calculate in the realm of arithmetic, not of mathematics, but of arithmetic. We can calculate numberless calculations. Whatever comes along in our life, we can do it. Why? Why can we do that? Why are we able to do that? This is mastering a big field. It's mastering the field of numbers in the field of arithmetic, of 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, million of different calculations we can master. This is a big thing. On the basis of what? On the simple basis that we know and have learned in school already in the first grade, two categories. That's all. We have learned two categories. We have learned the category of the digits from 1 to 10, and we have learned the four ways of calculation of addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. Two categories that are very distinct. Multiplication has nothing to do with a 5 or a 7. Division has nothing to do with a 2 or a 4. See, there are two very distinct categories. Because we have learned what the categories are without knowing that what we were learning. We just went to school and said, all right, I have to learn what the teacher teaches me. And we have not seen the magnitude of it, that by seeing in an infinite subject simplicity, but simplicity only then when that simplicity is based on right categories, that then really we begin to master the infinite subject. So with two categories built together in conjunction with each other is enabling us to calculate, so to say, infinitely in the realm of arithmetic. Isn't that a wonder? We never stood really in awe before what we learned in the first grade in school. We never stood in awe. If we would have stood in awe before it, we would therefore also stand in awe to wonder what are the categories of being, those categories which make up our life, the infinitely diversified ways of life and experience of life. What are those few simple categories that master the infinite experience of life? Wouldn't we? We would stand in awe if that would be possible. And we can stand in awe because we can see that up to now, in the whole history of mankind, nobody has found those categories that would relate to being, not to animal and plants and numbers, but to being. Do we feel the grace of the hour, of our age in which we live, that for the first time in human history we have found the categories of being? No philosopher has found it. No material or natural scientist has found it. No psychologist has found it. Nobody has found it until Mrs. Eddy came. And even she gave it without that the reader knew it, It was only when Mr. Dawley came that he said, I show you the categories in the textbook. It was always there, but you couldn't recognize it, but I show it to you, that there are those categories. Well, we'll come back to this when we talk about Christian Science. So the very first thing I just wanted to point out is the bigness of a holistic science that says, as elements, we had first elements, that says we must only, a holistic science can only calculate with holistic elements. Let's say ideas. Ideas are holistic. As further than as categories, a holistic science says we can only calculate with these elements if we can really reduce the numberless or infinite ideas to categories that are holistic. That are holistic. We come back to it tomorrow, what that implies in Christian Science. But first of all, we must see that this category must be holistic. Which brings us further to law, which says that these categories are not separate from each other. Because in a holistic being, where there is only one being, you have no separation. Therefore, these categories of being are related to each other through holistic laws, so that they form a holistic whole. And so we must see that the laws of the holistic science must be holistic laws. Well, did the old science have holistic laws? No, they never had it. They had always limited laws called mostly the law of cause and effect. That's a law that is limited because it is in a closed system. It starts with a cause and ends with an effect. So that was called the law of cause and effect. But the law of cause and effect is not absolutely right. And you get the shock because we all were thinking always in cause and effect. When we had a cause, we knew that there will be an effect. When we had an effect, even an evil effect, we were asking ourselves, what is the cause of that effect? So you can see it is a very limited realm, starting with cause, ending with effect. But this is not so in being, in a holistic science. Because in a holistic science, you can have no limitation. And we see that very clearly. If we have a cause that leads to an effect, we know at once that that effect is also again a cause, because it will have side effects. So the effect is at the same time cause again. Or the other way around, the cause that led to an effect is actually not the cause. It is the effect of a cause that was before that cause, a predisposing cause. That cause didn't arrive out of nothing. It arose out of another cause that preceded it. So you can go on both ends, further and further and further, and you don't come to an end. Which means that the holistic law is overformed from the cause and effect to a holistic cause and a holistic effect. A wholeness cause and a wholeness effect. There is no end to that line of cause and effect. So that actually, when we think this out, we get the whole field of causes that at one point comes to our notice as bringing forth an effect, and then we don't take any more into consideration the whole field of further effects that follow it. so that actually again we get away from cause-effect as being two things that exist. They don't exist. There is no differentiation between cause and effect. They are one. Cause is effect, effect is cause, so that the whole law of cause and effect in a holistic science must disappear. It is then just one thing, a holistic law, which knows no cause-effect relationship, which actually only knows the realm of oneness. Everything happens within the realm of oneness. And there is no beginning and no ending in the oneness. And you can see that this new science is stirring up our consciousness. It just kicks us out of our old ways of thinking and says our consciousness must be cultured into a completely different consciousness, or we can't handle the problem of the world anymore, because the world is a holistic problem and no more an isolated problem. So again, we feel and see that a new science is bringing about quite an overturning in our consciousness. Well, if we have holistic elements, ideas, and if we have then holistic categories, that means categories that are always referring to the whole and not to something isolated, and have a holistic law, which is the law of oneness and no more the law of cause and effect, which is very important for the Christian Science practice. Most Christian Science practice is done on the old science of cause and effect. The very first thing a practitioner or a student of Christian Science does when he has an evil effect, he says, from where does that evil effect come from? And looks for the cause of that effect. A holistic scientist does not do that. Holistic science does not take the problem and says, this is the problem, and I go back. The holistic science goes forward and puts it into the whole first, into a holistic whole, so as to see first what is actually the problem, because only the whole can then define what the problem is. And that will be a very different answer than what the human sense of the problem defines it to be. You can see the whole practice of Christian Science will change to that what Mrs. Eddy actually has taught in the textbook, only that we haven't seen it. We were approaching mostly the textbook with the old consciousness of science, instead of the consciousness of the new science, of the holistic science. That is in the main so. I say in the main because over the last 40 years or 50 years, we were already venturing on the holistic concept of science. But perhaps in a way that we are not really conscious of what we are really doing. We are not really conscious of the depth that was implied in such a approach. So we come to the next criterion of a science, and that system. Now we have been talking about system quite a while since John Dolley was bringing it up, and so that Mrs. Eddy said that Christian Science or divine metaphysics is reduced to a system. And he was investigating what the system is, and we have done some quite deep thinking about system. But again, I want to take up that problem of system and put it into a holistic concept. What do we see about system in a holistic concept? Well, we have known that the definition of science, of old science, has already said that science is knowledge reduced to law and embodied in a system. And that's what we were teaching over the last 40, 50 years in Christian Science, to try to show what that system is. But we showed it more in a static way, perhaps. It's very difficult to express it in English words and in German words, what I really want to show. But let's just try and feel our way, and I think you are good enough with me and gentle enough with me that, first of all, you know that English is not my national tongue, my mother tongue, that I have a bit difficulty. And second, that even when I have to teach it in German, I still will have some difficulty in bringing it out, because everything that is new, and this whole concept is very new, it came to me over the last 2-3 months, it's very new. One has difficulty in finding the right terminology, the right renderings, the right examples, perhaps, to bring out what has to be brought out. But that shouldn't hinder us in the least, because the main thing is that we get the feel of it, that we get the atmosphere of it, and it is left afterwards to those who are master in the language to bring it then out in correct and nice language and English language. So what I want to show is that we were thinking about system quite a lot. And I want now to stress mostly not so much what the system is, but what the system implies when it is viewed in a holistic science. So what are the characteristic traits of a system? Well, I just try to enumerate a few points and build it up. Well, a system must always be considered as an indivisible whole, or else it is not holistic. It must be as a whole, not as an isolated, as a closed system. This system must consist of a set of holistic categories, because a system is always the interplay of categories, of two or more categories. But these categories must be holistic categories, or we fall away from holism. Further, we must see that the system always operates as a whole, never as a part of the system. We think that that the system operates in various parts and in isolated parts, but we must be aware that the system always operates as a whole. That's why every treatment that is given in Christian Science from a holistic standpoint has a universal blessing and not just a partial blessing. It must always have a universal impact because it always touches the whole. I always deviate to Christian Science, although later on we come back to these things. But sometimes I have to give a little indication that we are not talking about an academic problem, but about a very living problem. Further, we must see that the behavior of the whole is influenced by the behavior of each part of that whole, so that the behavior of the whole changes when the part is changing. We can't think that we can change a part, but the whole remains the same. It affects the whole. Further, we can see that the behavior of a part... did I say that right? Yeah. That the behavior of a part... that the behavior of a part influences the behavior of each part of the whole system. So that we see that if the behavior of a part changes, then every other part changes too. Not only the whole changes, but every part of the whole changes. You know what that means? Put into Christian Science terminology means that if we undergo a real good consciousness shift, a paradigm shift in consciousness, that influences everybody in the world, the whole world, not us alone. or else we would be an isolated system. And we'll see as we go on how modern science and new science begins to see that. Or, put another way, we can say that no part of the system has an independent effect on the whole. Has no independent effect. There is no more an independent part, an independent effect. Everything is dependent on each other, interdependent. That's why we have then in the chart the laws of interdependence, because we see that everything in the chart is interdependent on each other and form new laws. Or again, this is perhaps the thing that is most interesting, but perhaps not understandable in the first go, but later on it is very easily to be understood. No matter how the parts are grouped together, how they are grouped together, they always form an individual whole, never a part. Just take the kaleidoscope and you see perhaps an example. That however the parts are grouped together, they are always a whole, never a part. But they are individual wholes. And so the whole always expresses itself in wholes, in the plural. Or as they say, the whole always expresses itself in holos, from the Greek. The plural of wholes. So that, like in a kaleidoscope, we see the parts remain the same in the way of form, of number, and of color and shape. They remain the same, but every time they are grouped together in a different way, they give a different pattern of a whole. So we never get away, really, from the whole. So the new scientists say, well, we have to get to the point where we are adapting our thinking to system thinking, no more to element thinking, to system thinking. And this, they say, is a great intellectual revolution. And we feel it. Okay, make a break.